have always talked about this heat. And so I'd like us to heat up together, that's all. So really, let's do it. Now, I suggest, we're just going to do one after all this long thing. But I really encourage you to, when you begin, because we're so self-conscious and we want to lose that little self, otherwise that higher self can't come through us, to shut your eyes so that the differences between us dissolve in the world of the inner image. And to bring your attention into your breath and to let the breath go right down to the root of your being, none of this shallow stuff. Be deep in this breath and really allow the nourishment to come into your body. My breath teacher is in this in this yurt now, and for years he's been saying, Joan, will you please breathe? It just means nourishing your body. So just spend a few minutes doing that, giving your attention only to breath. And I'll give you a chant. It's very simple. And it's for Marilyn and the vision that she continually brings into the world. The words are very simple. And just allow the words to come through in that sense of simple repetition so that one just drops away behind the words and the sound carries you so that the greater self can come through. And allow yourself to open in the heart and in the throat and in the belly. We are an old people, we are a new people, we are the same people deeper than before. We are an old people, we are a new people, we are the same people deeper than before. We are an old people, we are a new people, we are the same people deeper than before. We are an old people, we are a new people, we are the same people deeper than before. We are an old people, we are a new people, we are the same people deeper than before. We are an old people, we are a new people, we are the same people deeper than before. We are an old people, we are a new people, we are the same people deeper than before. We are an old people, we are a new people, we are the same people deeper than before. We are an old people, we are a new people, we are the same people deeper than before. We are an old people, we are a new people, we are the same people deeper than before. We are an old people, we are a new people, we are the same people deeper than before. We are an old people, we are a new people, we are the same people deeper than before. We are an old people, we are a new people, we are the same people deeper than before. We are an old people, we are a new people, we are the same people deeper than before. We are an old people, we are a new people, we are the same people deeper than before. We are an old people, we are a new people, we are the same people deeper than before. We are an old people, we are a new people, we are the same people deeper than before. We are an old people, we are a new people, we are the same people deeper than before. We are an old people, we are a new people, we are the same people deeper than before. We are an old people, we are a new people, we are the
people deeper than before. We are an old people, we are a new people, we are the same people deeper than before. We are an old people, we are a new people, we are the same people deeper than before. We are an old people, we are a new people, we are the same people deeper than before. We are an old people, we are a new people, we are the same people deeper than before. We are an old people, we are a new people, we are the same people deeper than before.
Next, I feel like I want to tell you a little bit more about Shira Mary, the lady of the ghost department. Because somehow this reminded me of Sharon's story that she told me. She said when she was at the Sufi retreat, she had not intended to do the sweat lodge ceremony. And the night before, one of the other people at the retreat just remarked to her, you know, I think of all the people here who should do that, you should. And she said, well, and I'm the kind of person who takes things like that as signs, and so I thought, okay, I will. And when she got to the teepees, she was intending to go in the one where there were two Indian shamans there, a man and a woman, I forget their names. But she was intending to go in the teepee with the man, and the woman came and said, I need 13 women. Somebody said to me when I was telling the story, a Davin. I need 13 women. And so again, she thought, okay, that's what I'm supposed to do. I'll do it. So she went into the teepee. And they sat around in a circle, and she said it was a very, very heavy experience. And the old Indian woman was beating and beating and beating on the drum. And it got the feeling of tremendous tension. In fact, one person left the group. It's probably why they needed 13, so they'd have a dozen left. And this tremendous energy was happening, and it was very frightening to her. And she felt like she could not breathe, and she was going to die. And she was just in a panic. And suddenly, the old Indian woman handed her the drumsticks and said, you do it. She thought, I can't even breathe, what do you mean? And she said, and all of a sudden, I just took in a deep breath, and I thought, you can breathe into dying. And I started beating, and I just went into another space entirely. And she said, the next morning, when I walked into the Pentagon, I breathed the Pentagon. I had this image while Joan was doing that of Joan as a veteran of past lives in which she was a shaman, being told that this time she gets to be a lady who teaches at Harvard and has this gets to be a Southern debutante. What? That's all right, you'll find your way back. Before we go on, I think what I'd like to do is to try for us to real quickly, just as part of the picture of who we are, to do that one sentence that I hope you're ready. If you're not, we'll see what blurts out. And so could we start here? This is one sentence. You missed that part because you were in the staff meeting. Okay. Those who might have missed it. What I said was, someone had suggested before lunch that we do, it would be really nice to have a sense of who's here. And so it can be like name, where you come from, and an interest or a description of yourself that you feel comfortable with. It can either be a professional one, or if you're not into that stuff, whatever you want. Let's keep it to one sentence because there are so many of us. And so since you had no warning, how about we start here?
My name is Linda Chellington-Jones. I'm the co-founder of the Mount Sienta Ranch and Research Center. And I teach a type of body work that forces another animal based on Feldenkrais work to people. I'm also a Feldenkrais practitioner.
Thanks.
I'm Judith, and this is part of my drawing.
I'm David, and I'm drop out of college like you. I dropped out of studying spiritual things, and I've been studying them ever since. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You live in Madras.
I live in Madras.
I'm Cindy, and I'm a nurse, and I'm going to enter the John F. Kennedy University for the master's program in holistic health.
I'm Lori, and I lead treks to Nepal and China. The thing I'm most proud of are the two children who are here today, Dan and Scott, who lives on the line.
Dan.
Hi, I'm Dana. Hello, Miguel. Hi, Janice.
I'm
Eva.
I'm a touchy measure too.
I'm Carol. I'm from Culver City, and I'm still exploring.
I'm Scott. I live at the Ojai Foundation, and I'm enjoying participating in the blending of science and mysticism.
I'm Gigi, and I've been living and working with the Ojai Foundation for the past 3 months in pursuing catalyzing people and myself towards the conspiracy of which we speak.
I'm Ada, and I've gone through quite a few transformations, and here I am in Ojai continuing.
I'm Diana. I'm from LA via New York. And I'm a writer, and I just moved up writing.
Me neither.
I'm Virginia. I'm a seeker. I want to know the significance of it.
Thank you. And down here?
I'm Deanne. I'm changing all the time. Right now I'm teaching Holocaust studies.
Victor Uslan, Gestalt practitioner and hiker.
Spencer, I've begun a Equipoise, which is a health education center that the international set up.
I'm George. I've been a yoga and acupuncture teacher for many years, but the past 2 years I've just been in transition.
I'm Mary. I felt like one of Colin Wilson's outsiders since I was 15 and studied 15.
Thank you.
I'm Quincy. I'm a cabinet maker in Laguna Beach.
My name is Peter. I'm a member of a New Age community in Illinois called the Stowe Group, and I'm exploring areas to be involved in the conspiracy.
I'm working on Conventura, and I'm exploring, and I do weave, and I read great books first.
Thank you. I'm Mary Ellen from Raleigh, and I'm involved in physical therapy and very much interested in the United Nations and the Planetary Initiative.
I'm Katie, and I do counseling in Ojai. I'm trying to do an Easter service of Aquarian ideas at this point.
I'm Blanche Toole. I'm a grandmother. I live in Ojai, and I'm curious, and that's why I'm here.
My name's Ed. I'm a community college counselor, and I teach personal growth classes.
I'm Patricia. I'm a masseuse, and I'm learning.
Okay. I'm Jim Danish. I live here. I'm an artist and a potter. I'm setting up a pottery here, and I also teach pottery at Ventura College.
Okay. Now we've got a structural consideration. Let's go back there to with you.
I'm Julie Moore. I'm an adoptions counselor, and I'm here expanding my feelings and thoughts.
I'm Tricia. I'm a social work administrator, and I'm an Aquarian who's proud to be a part of the conspiracy.
I'm Judy. I'm from Arcadia, and I'm in the 40.
Do you still like white?
I don't know.
Good.
I'm Carol, and I had wanted to say I'm looking forward to being 60 this year, but I'm not knowing what I'm going to do with the rest of it, but it was neat to hear you say you're doing.
Going to be 40.
It's good to hear from your kids.
Right. I don't know how else to identify myself anymore. I'm leaving behind MDs and teaching credentials and parenting, and I don't know what I'm going to do the rest after 60. I'm coming out.
I'm Mel. I'm a school nurse in L.A., Bard Senior High School, that's year-round. And we are the setting. I'm glad I have that kid yet.
I'm Liz, and I guess I'm looking for a commitment now.
Mm-hmm. I'm Jack, and after lunch I found out, and I don't understand this, but I'm apparently a nomadic educational PR man.
A traveling bell. Okay.
I'm the front of an anthropologist and the back of me too. I'm Erica. I live at the Ojai Foundation. I do a lot of the cooking and I also do massage. I'm Eileen. I'm a pediatrician at UCLA trying to teach medical students on how to stay happy in humanistic positions.
I'm Joel. I run the psychiatric residency program at UCLA, and I'm a student of the mind, models, and metaphors. I like to see what they're made up of. Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's see. That's the end of that part of that. So I think we come back here to you.
My name is Robert Martindale, and if I might paraphrase what you said about hardcore transformation junkie, I guess I would be an impacted transpersonal mainliner. Okay, the first 60 pages of your book put me in a holding pattern 10,000 feet over Oxnard Airport. I'm working social action and reaction in the workplace, both in the East Coast and the West Coast, and very much in a conspiratorial manner, and identify very much with your works. And trying to put a strong focus, in other words, not just taking your words, but, you know, I use Aquarian conspiracy just like that, just the two words, as you mentioned in your book about, mm-hmm. you know, you need sometimes the language doesn't exist. You gave me the language, so I go everywhere, even call up my attorneys in New York or class action suit, and I get them all involved. And when I visited for a deposition, and I get them all, everybody, I talk to them, you know, try to bring them out of their left brain activities and the richness of life, and how exciting it is to be involved, going through the process, win, lose, or draw.
He is a mainliner. Yeah.
I'm Marley Chow from Los Angeles, and I'm exploring, transforming, and integrating, and loving all of it. I feel like I was just born within the last 4 years.
My name is Ken. I'm down a transformational junkie or path, what do you want to call it? Too far down to turn back.
You can turn back? I'll bet.
Okay. My name is Laurel Maxine Paluzzi, and I moved from La Jolla to L.A. to bring a little love up there, and I'm interested in transformation through the media. Real happy to be here today.
Thank you.
My name's Kevin, and I'm in advertising and marketing, and we do fundraising for the City of Hope and for the Hunger Project, mm-hmm. and I lead guest seminars for EST, and I'm a skydiver.
Mm-hmm. I'm Jean Porter, and I'm from Santa Barbara, and right now my feeling tone is very high. I've moved from parenting of four children to now working in on a doctorate in sacred psychology. And I'm beginning to have the courage to say that I work with people in doing discovering their sacred self and the divine center and doing that through a process of transparency.
Good.
I'm Paul. I'm a gardener. The past 3 years at Fenhorn Foundation in Scotland. I'm presently with Linda and Dale with Nacimiento.
Okay. Let's see now. I think we caught that. No. Okay.
I'm Betty, and I'm very excited.
Okay. Now, then I guess we have. We're going to have to pick up some people here. So
me?
Yeah.
I'm Judy, and I'm from Santa Maria, and I'm presently enrolled at the community college there and very excited to be an adult learner.
I'm Mary, and I'm also from Santa Maria. I'm a teacher and trying to integrate some of what I'm learning into my classroom, and I'm also on the Board of Trustees of the Santa Maria High School District.
Chris, doing music part-time in Santa Barbara. Knowing less and learning more every day.
I'm Jim. I'm a physician, learning
how to become a healer and an androgynous being.
I'm Lois, I'm an Aquarian physician, and I presented your paradigm for healthcare to my medical staff meeting a couple years ago, and I've been running ever since.
How brave of you. Good.
My name is Craig. I'm a dirt lawyer, although I think I'm closer to the earth now than is usually the case. but I think, based on experience a couple of years ago, I'm frustrated, mystic, or at least might be.
Okay.
I'm Henry. I'm also an attorney from L.A., but my major responsibility is to be the head of the firm's Department of Whimsical Affairs. I think I came here because I need more evidence that this is real and not just your book.
Okay, good.
I'm Joe, and I'm an early childhood educator at a community college in Santa Maria, and I have recently been experiencing lots of shifts in my perception.
I'm Ruth, and I'm a professional student, and I'm excited about what's going on. Very excited.
I'm Bella. I'm from Los Angeles. I'm a retired bookkeeper and trying to learn other things about myself and others.
I'm Gloria, a registered nurse, and I'm about 7 months old.
Got it. Okay, now right up here at the front, I guess we can
see. I'm Joseph. Mm-hmm. And I have a custom cabinet shop in Santa Barbara, and I'm learning about new ways of healing.
Okay.
I'm Marilyn from Santa Barbara, and I am directed by a private preschool of my making and my dreams. And I teach children about change a lot, but it's usually on a piece of bread as we watch it turn to mold. And as an adult, I attack and learn how change is made in positive ways.
I'm Don Vaughn. I'm searching for a philosophy, I think.
I'm Joel Ryder. I live in Santa Barbara and first came there and to California about a year and a half ago. It's like I was born away from home.
Yeah.
Becoming frighteningly hardcore and getting into journalism that is a natural expression of that.
I just plagiarized that there. I was like I was born away from home. I love that.
Yes, I'm Shelley, and I'm a tarot reader who lives in Culver City, but I'm also a psychology student, and this quarter I have the opportunity of co-teaching a class on the Aquarian Conspiracy at Cal State Dominguez. So I'm really excited about that. I've been getting information all day.
You may be interested to know there. Let's see, I just did a taping in Baltimore for the PBS station of a course, a college course they're doing of series on transformation. It's like 8 half-hour shows. And they said that Cal State Dominguez Hills was going to be one of the places using it when they ever get it finished.
Really?
Yeah, it's part of that
how
system.
Drop
me a note and I'll send you the information on it. Okay.
I was also an ex-neighbor of Jones from Key West, Florida.
Did you know each other then?
No.
That is funny.
My name is Perry, and I work on something like reaching everyone who would want to be reached with the information they need. I don't really know.
That's great.
I work for Maryland, and I guess it's...
And nobody there knows for sure what they're doing. That's what's so exciting about it. You know, we have a lot of people come in as guests to our staff meetings, and sometimes they want all the staff members to introduce themselves and say what they do, and this great confusion ensues because we change it every week. Well, you wait a minute. What did you say? You're globalizing what?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Once the answer was cook. The last time the answer was globalizing this business.
Franchises?
No, just that could be disastrous. Wasn't that neat, what everybody is doing? I mean, doesn't it give you a sense of...
How about you?
You're supposed to infer that from something I said. Yeah, from what you all said. Because we're all the same person. Thank you. I've got this stuff, this territory that I want to cover. It doesn't have any order to it. So I'm just going to do it. One theory that I would like to put out here is not 100% proven, but I think it's... The circumstantial evidence for it is very heavy, and I want you to take it seriously, and it may not sound serious, but it's real important. And I'll tell you, this is not my theory, but I kind of helped to midwife it by accident. I was speaking at a Montessori Association national meeting, American Montessori Association meeting about a year ago, and the lady who was going to introduce me, as you know, Montessori is preschools. The lady who was going to introduce me was sitting next to me at the dinner table. She said, "I'm very nervous because I have never talked to this many grown-ups before." And I said, "It's okay, Nancy." I mean, it just popped out of my mouth. "It's okay, Nancy," I said. "There aren't any grown-ups." And she thought that was cute, and I thought that was cute. In fact, I think she used it in the introduction. And about a week later, I was mentioning this to a friend. In fact, it was the friend with the long eyelashes and the computer. And he heard it differently than I meant it. Do you find you get some of your best ideas from misunderstanding what other people said? And he started to laugh. He said, "Yeah," he said, "there aren't any grown-ups. And the rest of the kids don't know it." And then he thought for a minute. He said, "Do you realize there is no such state as grown-up? It's all a myth. It's just a lie. Everybody goes around pretending that they are and hoping other people don't get on to the fact that they're not. Because nobody is, because it doesn't happen." And I know a real good theory when I hear one. So we talked about calling a press conference to announce this. But we couldn't figure out who should do it because we didn't think we should, because who would believe us? And we thought maybe Henry Kissinger or somebody like that would give it a certain amount. But the more we talked about it and played with that idea, the more I thought, you know, that's right, there's no evidence for grown-upness. None. I mean, you think about it. On both the bad side and the good side, there is no evidence for grown-upness. And the more I thought about it, I realized, you know, this is a construction. I don't know how it got started. A couple of people on the staff have come up with interesting theories about that. But somewhere along the line, we began, and I'm not sure that all cultures do this, and in fact, historically, apparently there were times in which children were not actually given separate designations in the way that we do now. And adulthood was not so sharply defined as we try to define it. But that, in fact, we are an essence, and we are the same essence whether we are 3 years old or 30 years old or 90 years old. There is no break in that. That it is. I'm not saying there's no such thing as maturity, but maturity is probably being appropriate at any age. So you could be an appropriate three-year-old. But grown-upness is actually a very dangerous myth that we've perpetrated on ourselves, because what it does is it cuts us off from life. First of all, it makes us lack respect for children, because we think somehow they're not there yet, so what can they know? And then also, we make sure they get cut off from life, because we say to them, "Well, you can play now, but wait till you're grown up. Just wait." My mother used to say to me when I was a little kid, because she was always wanting to make me take a nap, and I always had a lot of energy when I was a kid, and I didn't want to take a nap. She said, "Boy, I wish I could. When you're grown up, you'll want to take a nap." And, you know, it's like we should get worried looking. I mean, actually, kids come to think that that's what happens. When you begin to get worried, you'll know you're grown up. And you get, because you've got all these heavy responsibilities. And there is a sense that, you know, that the child has this energy and this way of perceiving the world, and we cut it off. Wordsworth, in his famous poem, An Ode on the Intimations of Immortality, talks about trailing clouds of glory, did we come? We were born away from home. You know, it was, we knew when we came in that there, where we came from. And then little by little, we forgot that. And that every passing year of childhood into adolescence, into youth, and I mean into our so-called young adulthood, as he put it, the prison house of custom closes in. And we lose that freshness. And that poem, by the way, is full of so many lines from which titles have been taken. Splendor in the Grass, for instance. That we lost that hour. We lost that being in the present moment. And then colors darkened. And sounds dulled, and everything changed. We tell kids to not be themselves, is basically what we do. We tell them what's so, and it's not what they thought was so. My 15-year-old daughter was telling me this morning, went downstairs to tell her goodbye and that I was going off to Ojai for the day. She said, oh, she was smiling when I woke her. She had this interesting dream, and she was giving me all this stuff. It was a very bizarre dream she had. But there was a place in her dream where she found a prison. I can't remember whether she got in it, but she was describing it. It reminded me, in a way, of King of Hearts. How many of you have seen King of Hearts? You know? Well, she was saying it was a prison, and it had narrow doors, which King of Hearts, the prison, it was like a prison, but it was like where you kept crazy people. But she said it was like all of the people who were in there, they were not only the crazy people, but all the curious people got put in the prison, too. Which I think is a real good description of what happens in the parenting process, in the educational process. And so we put out this message that when you get to be big, A, you're going to have all the answers, and B, well, you hate them. And so who wants to do that? It's no wonder there's a certain rebellion against that. Because what we don't say is, what if what we said to kids was, hey, you are so lucky, it's going to get better and better, and you're going to get more and more adventures, and you do get responsibilities, but you're going to get to be freer and freer. But that's not what we do. You grow up. But then what happens is that when people get to the age where they think, now, does anybody here, and I know this is a rhetorical question, do you remember a specific day, month, week, year, in which suddenly you went from being not grown up to being grown up? And you knew that that had happened? I mean, this is just something I guess I must be. I'm 21. Or I'm 18. Or I just got my first mortgage. Or, you know, I got worried enough. And so I think that what happens to us is that because we have created this myth, we don't realize that we are all still kids. And that furthermore, all kids are ancient. We're all old people and new people at the same time. And so this keeps us from respecting the wisdom of children. And I must say, I hear from my children and other children I know, every once in a while, stuff falls out of their mouth that is as wise as they'll ever get. What they know may deepen, they may elaborate on it, but they already have it. And as for us, we're kids. We got the kid that's the governor, we got the kid that's the president, we got the kids at the Pentagon, and we got us kids here in the yurt. And we get to sit on the floor, which most kids don't get to, you know, when they get to be our age. And my publisher says he loves to sit on the floor, but he figures he shouldn't do that at the office because people would lose respect for him. He's supposed to be the boss. Jim Shannon was talking about being in the airport and standing at the airport counter, and he would brace himself on the top of the counter, and he was swinging back and forth when he suddenly realized, oh, I'm a lieutenant colonel in the Army. What was he? He was in uniform. What's worse? And he says, well, I stopped and pretended that I had gum on my shoe, and that was what I was doing. One lady said to me, you know you can still run down grassy slopes if you get a dog. One of the main reasons for having children is to have an excuse to play with crayons and electric trains and go on picnics. Because actually we now need tricks in order to get back to playing. Which brings me back to what I was saying earlier about Warren Bennis's theory. The ability to create a context for other people to play in. See, playing is really what it's all about. If we're not playing, we're not working well. The same friend who came up with the breakthrough theory on there is no such state as grown up, the same evening, he was really hot that night, I said to him in the course of this conversation, you know what, I wonder what I mean when I say, because I sometimes will say of people, I know they're brilliant, which is very different from being intelligent. Mm-hmm. And he said, brilliant people know how to play. Because being brilliant is being able to play with the ideas, not just to have the content, but to create context and move them around and shift them around like tinker toys and to play with them. And even when you think about brilliance in terms of a gemstone, it's the play of light, isn't it? I mean, it's the movement. It's the dynamic play that we're talking about. The interesting thing about the grown-up myth is that, strangely enough, we reserve the very highest honors and love in our society for the people who never buy into the myth. Buckminster Fuller, Einstein, Margaret Mead, Woody Allen, they knew better, know better, you know? If the whole quality of creativity, whether it's in a scientist or an artist or an entrepreneur, is the ability to play. The ability, the not having lost that wonder, that beginner's mind from childhood. What we're in is a real interesting game. I will tell you a myth I made up from a space of my consciousness that knows more than I always necessarily know. And I think this is true. And I think many of you will feel that it's true from your experience. And it's one of those things that we know it and we forget it, and we know it and we forget it, and we keep getting amnesia. I think that we are playing a very high game, and that we've been playing it for millennia, and that we keep getting new chances to be in the game at whatever level we feel like we want to be in, or whatever level we were ready for. And so when you are coming in to play this game again, you get your choice of where, you know how on the computer chess games you can set it for however high you're ready to play it, however difficult you're ready to play it. And so if you want to, if you're willing to go through a lot of confusion about your identity and to be out of time with your culture or whatever, you can play the game at a very difficult level, or tricky level, which is more fun, which is more exciting, it's more painful, and it's more confusing, and it's more whatever. But you can do that if you want to. And that what's happened is that the way we have been playing the game on this planet, we have now got ourselves into kind of an end game, where we have to find out whether we're really going to get out of this. I mean, we made it so difficult for ourselves that we have now to make the game more exciting, like you would a real good drama with its black moment. What we've done is we've created the potential to annihilate ourselves. It's like Space Invaders. We have some computers at the office, and I have one at the house. It's got Space Invaders on it. I mean, you can blow yourself up is what can happen if you don't play the game cleverly enough. And that's what we've done. We have created brilliantly.
The ultimate.
This, oh, right. I mean, we made it real serious. But luckily, what's happened is that our higher selves, who knew it was a game, are letting us remember more of what it is we were doing. And when I was recently at the Jack Tar Hotel in San Francisco for a conference, there's an art gallery in the lobby. They had out on an easel outside the door this picture that I was just so stunned by, and I would have bought it if it weren't $600 for a lithograph. But there is a man, a very beautiful man with wings, on a winged horse on the ice, and the horse's knee is bent and he's pinioned to the ice. And the man is in a quite desperate situation, and this beautiful horse, this beautiful winged man, and the winged horse pinioned to the ice. And he's looking back and up as if on clouds is a serene version of himself, straight and calm on this winged horse. And that felt like where we are. I mean, there is a part of us that is clear and calm about what we're doing that we sometimes can check in with. And then there's the part of us that has got ourselves into this crazy game where we are pinioned and where we are saying things like, if we don't make that particular deadly weapon that would blow up the plant, first we have to develop it so we can promise not to make it anymore. Mm-hmm. And then they promise, they have had to develop some things, they promise they're not going to make it anymore, but we're really worried about Libya and, you know, all these other people who've gotten into the game. And so we can either freak out about this game, or we can consider that we did it. And that if we did it, we can go into another space and we can imagine other endings to this game. And I think that's what people are doing. Keith Floyd, the man whose nifty poem I read to you a while ago about Nirvana is a bummer, mother, gave me a copy of, he has done a retelling of a koan called A Goose in the Bottle. And it's just a wonderful version of this koan. And he starts off by explaining the fix, in a sense, we get ourselves into. We have anxiety about our anxiety. We get depressed over our depression. We have all these contradictions and all these things we're trying to do, and we seem to be stuck. And then he begins telling this story. The farmer had a wonderful, wonderful vase that had been handed down in his family for generations, that was the treasure of his life. And he kept it in a carved rosewood stand, and everyone who came to his house admired this vase tremendously. One morning, the door was left a little bit ajar, and a gosling, a baby goose, came wandering through the door, and it just wandered around the farmer's house and poked around. And it was a very curious little goose, and it peeked down into the vase, and then it started squirming down in, and it managed to get itself squirmed into the bottle, into the vase. And then it couldn't figure out how to get out. The farmer came home and at least was at first relieved to see that his vase hadn't been broken, and then wonders, how is he going to get the goose out? Because he's a very humanitarian man who would not harm a living thing. But neither can he destroy his bottle, his vase. This is just too much of a treasure. It's too important to him. So there is this dilemma, and people come, and they talk, and everybody has advice. He tries to oil the neck of the bottle, and he can't get the goose out. And also has to keep feeding the goose, because he's a humane man. And so the goose is growing, and pretty soon this vase is just full of feathers. So the koan is this. You cannot break the bottle, and you cannot harm the goose. What is the answer? Keith Floyd was very tricky, and he wrote out the answer in a kind of simple code that you had to figure out to get it, just to make it a little trickier. But the answer is, there, it's out. And then the remark is, and if you didn't remember how we got it in, you're pretty dumb, for God's sake. Okay. If, in fact, we made up this game that we're in, we can make up another ending for it. Now, remember Rupert Sheldrake's theory about the morphogenetic fields and about how the universe does not so much have laws as habits, and we create these invisible fields and then things fall into it and it happens that way and it keeps happening that way? I talk to a lot of people who have a lot of despair about the world. And in fact, a lot of them are very fond of their despair, I think. And if you say to them, hey, you know, we can work to change things and there is this and there is that, they'll say, and world hunger, don't be ridiculous. End war, don't be ridiculous. It's human nature. And it's too big a problem. And...